This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
NHL trade deadline day. Go over a little bit here on the nightcap. Welcome in. Zach Jones along with you for the next hour or so. Sabres did make some moves today. The NFL Combine continues along. Formula One qualifying begins tomorrow with the first race this weekend. Got a lot to talk about tonight. So welcome in. Thank you for joining me. Let's talk about some of it. First up, of course, the NHL trade deadline. The Sabres do end up making three moves today, one of which is sending out Rasmus Asplund to the Nashville Predators for a seventh round pick. Two prospects that aren't even really prospects. They're more just AHL players that get transitioned between Anaheim and Buffalo. But the big trade is, of course, the Minnesota Wild trading the Sabres forward Jordan Greenway for a second-round pick in 2023 and a fifth in 2024. 6'6", Granato knows him well from his years in USA Hockey, from when I believe Greenway was, 17, 18 years old. Not a ton of production there, but it does feel like a very potential-based move. Greenway himself is 26 years old, and there's a lot of potential there. 6'6". This is a guy that they really don't have this sort of imposing figure in the top nine. And now they do kind of have a real big size advantage in a lot of their forward groups. Dylan Cousins being 6'3", of course, Tage Thompson being 6'7". And you kind of just go down the list. Tuck as well, I believe, is 6'2". Skinner's the one that's kind of out there at being 5'9". But Paterka's 6'. Quinn, I think, is 6'. Like, they're a rather large team now. But really the big thing for me was listening to Sabres general manager Kevin Adams talk about him today and talk about head coach Don Granato as well, and just how much Granato had been banging the drum essentially to bring in Greenway, that he thought that there was real serious untapped potential there. And that's something to get excited about as a Sabres fan, as somebody that, while they didn't do a ton here, they do get Riley Stillman, who looked pretty solid last night against Boston. The game got away from the team as a whole, and Boston is on a legitimately historic pace. I think they're the first team to reach 100 points in however many games they did so when they did beat the Sabres last night. So it's not too surprising that you got whooped on, but the score was not 7-1, not even slightly. It was probably more of a 3-0 game, 4-1, if you really want to get cute with it. But after that, it really got away from the Sabres just because they pulled Luukkonen with 4 minutes left. And it went downhill very, very quickly. But they get Tampa tomorrow. Rasmus Dahlin did practice today. He's not officially ruled out. I think it's still a pretty sizable chance that he does not play. But for me, at least, you look at the Sabres team with about 20 games left to play, 20, 21-ish. And there is a good feeling here. And listening to Adams talk, he talked for almost about a half hour with the media. We have that up at our website, WGR550.com, or on the Odyssey app as well. If you did miss that, if you want to re-listen to that as well, we have that there for you. And just for me, listening to Adams talk, it gave you this sense of confidence that, they really love this group. The front office, the coaching staff, everyone. They love not only just the group that's already in Buffalo, that is competing right now for a playoff spot, but the group that is coming up. Matthew Savoy, he's going to be a Sabre next year. Whether people want him to or not, he's going to be. This group really believes in him. Yuri Kulik as well, over in Rochester, is putting up a great season at 18 years old. And this comes off of great World Juniors. Like, he is also taking that next step. And you got to remember guys like Noah Austin. And then, of course, Devin Levi, who they're going to sign the moment Northeastern season ends. And it's snowballing almost that, like, you do have this positive feeling. And I'm glad as well, as someone that did want the Sabres in on Chychrun and was kind of furious at Ottawa's price for him that they were able to get him for. Adams kind of said the quiet part out loud, and something that I think a lot of us have been thinking about, myself included, that just because they accepted Ottawa's deal does not mean like that was the deal to beat. Or that if I just paid that and added like another third round pick on, like that would have been our guy. Adams, and this is where the whole like Savoy is going to be a Sabre next year comes into play, because he outright said that guys like Kulich and Savoy were untouchables, that they were non-starters. And I can understand why. When Matthew Savoy was drafted last year, he was considered of the top guys in the draft, maybe the highest potential, offensive potential in the draft up to that point. A lot of people compared him to Braden Point, and a lot of Sabres fans as well saw Danny Briere in there as well. And so, well, yeah, of course you're not going to, especially with him doing really, really well in Winnipeg with the juniors. I mean, like, he's doing very, very well, had a bit of a slow start, and has really rebounded incredibly well. And then Yuri Kulik, who they get at 28, and immediately it was like, yeah, at the under-18s, he was phenomenal, had a great shot, maybe the best in that group, and just was a very, very unique scorer. I remember their scouting department, I think that's how they described him, was a very unique scorer that you don't always see, if I'm remembering that correctly. And then he has a great World Juniors, where really Canada and Connor Bedard sort of outshined him and his Czechia team. And then you just go to Rochester, and it's the same thing. He's having just as good of a year there as you would expect somebody with, you know, the great World Juniors he had, the great under-18s he had, but he was picked at 28 overall. And he already feels like you can probably put him in pen, it feels like, in some of these guys' spots for next year. Maybe Victor Olofsson, potentially. And it's this young group that's coming up. And even now on the Sabres, while there's been moments where he struggled, Jack Quinn has absolutely been playing out of his mind recently. Part of that's due to the Tuck injury, absolutely. I'm not going to forget that. And now he gets to play with far better line mates, just because it's Skinner and Thompson and not necessarily Cousins and Paterka. Cousins, obviously, well on his way to being an elite center. Paterka, also a rookie as well. But 2 points against Columbus, 2 points against Washington, a point against Tampa, a point against Toronto, 2 points against Anaheim. He's really starting to put it together. And as well, even in the games he's not getting points, it feels like every night he's got like two shots on net. That he's really putting the puck where it needs to be, and you're just hoping for a little bit of puck luck. Paterka as well, kind of figuring himself out again. 2 games ago, I want to say it was against Washington, he broke his goal drought. I think it was 28 games. He breaks that drought. He got an assist last night as well. He's starting to kind of put it together. Cousins, we know, has kind of broken out as well. And then, of course, Dahlin, Thompson, Power as well. This young group keeps coming along. The one position to me that I continue to look at, and just I get nervous that it's going to hold them back longer than it should be, is goaltender. It is goaltender. UPL played well last night. But when the game got away from him, and that's last night was one of his good nights. It was. But too many times, especially post All-Star break, we've seen games where he just gets shelled. That Calgary game right out of the gate from the All-Star break was just a nightmare scenario for him. And he just looked awful from the word go in that game. You hope he pulls it together, because in reality, we know Craig Anderson can't at 41 years old. You want him to be able to hold on to as many of these games as possible, to play as many of these games as possible. But his 41-year-old body, there was a save last night when essentially Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen just went full split to try to save a puck. And my immediate thought was two things. Unbelievable save by Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and if Craig Anderson did that, he would burst into flames. He would become dust immediately. His body would not be able to move like that. And it's fair, he's 41 years old. But the more I look at this team, I do start to think it is a successful year from where they're at because they're building something that really does feel like it is going to be long-term. And you even listen to some people in the national realm for hockey as well. It's the same feeling that they may make it this year. And if they do, it's a year ahead of schedule. But they're definitely here next year and the year after that and the year after that. And they've already locked up a lot of their stud players. Darlene's going to be the next one to get a really long-term deal. But Cousins and Thompson and Samuelson all getting those seven-year extensions on very reasonable contracts. You look now at David Pastrnak to Tage Thompson at similar ages. Yes, Pastrnak has had more production for longer. But Thompson's coming in likely over 100 points score. So is Pastrnak. And Pastrnak, I think, is making over $4 million more, over $5 million more. That is going to be a very nice deal for the Sabres in like 2 or 3 years, where they're able to bring in better free agents to go along with Thompson. And when Skinner eventually kind of ages out, and now all of a sudden it's going to be Kulich or Osland or Savoy in there. Or, you know, they've got a ton of Russian players as well in their pipeline that are kind of just like hanging out in Rochester, performing well and kind of building themselves up as well. Goaltenders is that one position I know who is there. I know who is coming. It's Devon Levi at Northeastern. I know that. But with goaltender kind of being a weird position in not just to evaluate, but to just from year to year, and even just progression. How do they progress? How will Levi progress? The hope, I think, realistic, this is probably the best case scenario. Of course, the real best case scenario is he makes the team right out of the gate and is amazing. The best case scenario is he goes after this Northeastern season, comes to Rochester, plays games in the AHL, maybe plays a playoff game or two with Rochester as well, and his season's over with. And it looks great, and we're feeling wonderful about how he performed when he was in the pros after college. But then he's probably still in Rochester for an entire year. That probably happens. He's in Rochester likely for an entire year. Maybe not the entire year. If they make a playoff push or he is just performing that well that it's like you have to call him up, great. But I can't see him really making the team out of the gate next year. I cannot see it. So we've got another year of probably the same goaltending. Now, ultimately, I'm not here blaming Adams for not getting a goaltender. I liked Vizhmelka from Arizona, but was Arizona going to be willing to give him up? It sounds like no, because he didn't get traded. It's just, they're in this weird limbo phase. Maybe someone like Yuri Saros becomes available in the offseason, maybe. But I'm not really going to hold my breath there. Because if that's going to be, in my head, the plan, that is definitely going to happen. I'm going to get disappointed. If like my entire mindset is just they're going to trade with Nashville to get Yuri Saros. That is going to be their guy. 28, I think he'll be – yeah, he turns 28 in mid-April. He'll be 28 with the Sabres. Perfect. Great bridge guy. He'll be great for the Sabres. And Levi can take his time. Wonderful. But how do we know we're going to get there? I'd like to see them really go after it this summer, if that is really a thing. If Saros is going to be on the trade block come the summer, I'd love for it to happen. I'd love for it to not turn into what was the Jacob Chychrun saga, where it felt like for a while that Ottawa would add him. Going into the season, it felt like Ottawa was going to add him. And it took till 2 days before the trade deadline. I would love if the Sabres were just able to add him in the summer. Maybe a trade that takes place at the draft. That'd be wonderful. Because then, if Saros is on this roster next year, opening night, I would put money down that the Sabres make the playoffs. I would absolutely do it. No question. Very few things will happen in the offseason that would change my opinion on that. Because the defense would all get 1 year older. They would add probably a few more pieces. A few more offensive pieces, likely also coming up. I've already mentioned Savoy and Kulich. I think those probably are the two. Austin, I'm not really sure about, but I think those are probably the two. Cousins, another year older. Quinn, another year older. Paterka, another year older. I would absolutely put that team in the playoffs. And I think that's what this year is about. Has now gotten to the point that going into next year, if they did add a guy like Saros, I wouldn't even hesitate. I wouldn't even think about it. Would I treat them like I treat the Bills, where it's like an afterthought, I barely care about the regular season? Absolutely not. They still have not broken the drought. I would still want to see that happen. But if you added somebody like that, 28 years old, realistically prime years for a goaltender, I would sit there and go, done. Let's get after it. Let's have some fun. Because this trade deadline, I have noticed, and everyone has noticed, how many deals are being made, how many teams are really, it feels like, putting all, if not all, most of their chips in the middle of the table going, let's get after it, baby. There's only going to be one team that wins the cup. And because of how the playoffs are situated, most teams are going to be left super disappointed in round one. This is another reason why you need to get back to the 1-8. You got to get back to the 1-8. Have to. Just to make round one not the end-all be-all for a lot of teams. Toronto and Tampa are going to square off. Toronto has been the team to me that has said, what is next year? Who cares? And they've just gone after it. I love it. I respect it. Ottawa, really have gone all in. Pierre Dorion, it looks like his job is always on the hot seat, and with potentially new ownership coming in as well, he's got to really sell to them that the Senators are going to be like a hot ticket price kind of deal. Even then, they're not in the playoffs yet. Now they are on a bit of a hot run. They keep winning. They are a ton of fun to watch. But they're not in a playoff spot yet. They're not even really running away with one yet. They are just tied with the Sabres. And even then, they have a game in hand on the Sabres. But they've won four in a row. And they just, it's seemingly, they will not stop winning. They look good doing so. Chychrun played last night, and they did beat the Rangers, who is another team who has gone all in on this year. Tarasenko and Kane are the big two pieces they added, but that already adds to an older roster with Artemi Panarin and Zibanejad and Kreider. Igor Shesterkin, I think is around 28 years old. I'm blanking on hockey goalie ages. He's 27. He's the same as Saros. But he's probably the youngest guy of their core. And he can play almost for another 10 years, maybe at that kind of pace, at that kind of level. He's that good. But they're looking at their core going, all right, well, we've got a decision to make here. Like, we're either going to live and die with this core, or we're going to try just that little bit more and get there. And that's what they're doing. Adam Fox as well is probably the other guy that's going to be on this team long term. But that's, you know, one or two guys they're going after because their core is older. They're in their 30s. New Jersey is the one team, it feels like, that has gone all in on this window. But to them, it's more, we're young, we're hitting our stride now, and there's a real chance they can win the cup this year. There's a real chance that New Jersey could build something here that is lasting. It's a legacy. They're that good. It feels like they can be that good. Especially with the emergence of guys like Dawson Mercer, who just now, he's going to be like a 30-goal scorer just because out of left field, he keeps scoring. He's unbelievable to watch. But there's so many teams going in after it. And I think if the Sabres did miss the playoffs this year, you will look at the deadline and probably go, that's when it happened. Like, they didn't push too much for Chychrun or Meyer. But in the long run, it probably will be better. Because you'll have teams like Ottawa or Toronto or Tampa or Boston or, well, Pittsburgh kind of gave up, or the Rangers or Jersey, who will sit there and go, all right, well, we went all in. We've got maybe two more years left of this. Or if you're the Rangers, yeah, it's probably about 2 years before that entire team really kind of falls apart. Boston, they're going all in this year because they're trying to win with the Bergeron group. Bergeron, Marchand, those kind of guys, they're trying to win with that group one more time. Yes, they've signed David Pastrnak to an 8-year extension, and Linus Allmark also has his as well. But they're getting older. They're going to have a tough time doing a rebuild on the fly. This will not be like the Red Wings of the 90s going into the 2000s, where they're just able to bring in Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk, and they just kind of in with the old or in with the new and out with the old. That's not really how Boston feels at all. There isn't this stud prospect just waiting to break through. They are just...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Such a heater this year. Watching Boston play, I will say, I'm going to watch every Boston game in the playoffs. I find them so interesting to watch. And it's not because I like them. I don't. I'm going to root against them every game. But it is so, so cool to see a team that is so good at every aspect of the game. Every single one. Because last year I was rooting for teams like Calgary and Edmonton, like these high-flying, like, we play no defense. We're just going to just try to score 7 every single night. I really enjoyed that. And then even like the Rangers last year, watching Shesterkin just effectively will his team to wins. I was like, that's so cool. And then Colorado was a buzzsaw. Like, Colorado just felt like, they're going to take this. Like, it doesn't matter. They're taking this. Boston has felt like that all year. That they're just this machine that is just mowing through people. I did the same with Colorado last year. I watched every single one of their games. And if I couldn't watch it, I'd immediately watch the highlights the next day as I got up. I would make sure I would watch those highlights because I was just like, what is going on? Boston is that same feeling. I wasn't even dejected after last night's loss because I'm like, Boston is on a different level right now. The Sabres are getting better, absolutely. But right now, those guys are on a completely different level. And that's fine to admit. That's fine to kind of understand that's happening. You are still fans of the youngest team in the NHL. That is still a thing that is happening. Even with employing guys like Kyle Okposo and Craig Anderson, who definitely mess up the average. That is definitely a thing. Anderson's 41, Okposo's 35, 34. So there are growing pains that are going to go on. We're seeing them every night. But I like where this team is going. And adding a guy like Jordan Greenway, he adds more physicality. He adds some toughness. Adams did mention it today. They were getting bullied, and he liked how the team fought back. But he kind of wants to get a guy that will kind of discourage the whole, let's push around the little guys here. I love the psychopathic tendencies from Peyton Krebs. But he's 6 foot going up against guys who are like 6'4". Maybe let's not do that. Instead, you have Greenway. And if there really is that untapped potential that Granato feels there is, well, fantastic. Then he is worth the second and fifth round pick. That fantastic. That will only help this team if he really is like another 6'6" winger who, let's say he can bag 20 goals next year, if there really is untapped potential. Another great scoring winger in your top nine is great, great value. And if not, you move on. Your prospect pool is already loaded. And you had 3 second round picks this year. You gave up Vegas's. Phenomenal. I'm fine with it. And the fifth round pick is nothing. I don't, like, that's whatever. I barely count that. Yes, there are great guys that are picked in the fifth, sixth round, but they're usually usually Russian players or from these kind of more obscure European leagues that you've got to be exceptionally good at scouting and or ready to wait, which you can be. But also, let's not act like every fifth round pick is going to become Kapril Kaprizov. It's just not going to happen. There's just no way it's going to happen. But I left today, well, I wanted to move like a Chychrun or a Meyer. I absolutely pounded that drum. I'm not going to hide that. I definitely fell in love with the idea of that. Mainly because I thought they would be main pieces on this team immediately. I really did. I was all in on the idea of potentially trading a guy like Jack Quinn for a Timo Meyer because, well, I hope Jack Quinn becomes Timo Meyer. And I put him on that second line with Dylan Cousins, and I, in my mind, I was like, let the fireworks go. Just light them all up and let the show happen. But it didn't happen. And the future is still incredibly bright with this team. And hearing Adams talk about how excited they are about this group that they have now and the group coming up, it did leave me like really, again, this group, this front office, this coaching staff is just so much positivity I get from them. And I think a lot of Sabres fans as well get this from them. But like, it's not stopping. Even with losses like last night to Boston, I'm like, it's okay. Like, they're young. They're getting better. This is not from the past 11 years where they're in the middle of what should be maybe a playoff run here and they're just getting just destroyed by everybody. It's not that. It's essentially kids learning how to play in the NHL and learning to do it well, and they're doing it well. Just they're trying to find that consistency, and they're trying to find and they're slowly gaining that experience that they need to kind of push to that next level. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll do still a little more NHL as well, but we'll talk about the NFL Combine as a lot of the very exciting positions will begin testing starting tomorrow. We'll do that when we come back. This is the Nightcap on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap here on WGR. Zach Jones along with you for the next half hour or so. NFL Combine has been going on all week. A lot of the media's kind of been packing up, heading out as testing began yesterday with the defensive linemen and linebackers. It continued today with the defensive backs. I've got this on NFL Network. I've had it on all day. Just kind of going on. I've been a big combine junkie for like as long as I can remember. Like, I feel like I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I was like, I got to see who's running the 40. Like, I have to see the fastest dudes on the planet run. And it's only gotten worse as I've gotten older, because now it's part of my job, and I love that part of my job as well, because I'm a huge draft junkie. And I just, like, I've got my whole weekend set up, and I'm like very excited. Like, tomorrow, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch qualifying for F1 at 10 in the morning. And then at like 11 in the morning, I'm going to turn on like a little bit of NFL Network, get ready for the afternoon session. And then at 12:30, the Sabres play. And during that, like, I'm also going to be keeping up with the combine and the Sabres game. And then on Sunday, I've got the Bahrain race. I'm like, I've got my whole weekend set. And A good part of that is the combine, and it is watching just random dudes run around and do drills that for most of them have no bearing on anything they're ever going to do in their NFL careers ever. But to me, at least, and this is where I've figured out like where I sit with the combine. It doesn't matter if none of it truly matters where they get drafted. To a lot of fans, you look at DK Metcalf is probably the perfect example of this. DK Metcalf was like this fun, like freak athlete wide receiver that like some like, you know, dark corners of the draft world were like, he's like the best receiver in this draft class. He should be a top five pick. And it was kind of like, we're seeing him more as like a second round guy, and we don't really feel that way. And the moment the combine happened, the moment he ran in the 4.3s, the moment you saw his vertical jump, the moment you saw his broad jump, every draft junkie was like, top five done. I don't need to question anything anymore. Top five done. And yet, where did he actually end up? Kind of where he was originally being pegged to be. Second round. Was it the end of the second round? Yeah, and that was ridiculous. And he should have been taken higher. But a lot of this is for fans to kind of just put those fine measurements to us, the exact measurements of what a player is, who they are. What is their 40 time? Well, what did they run at the combine? Boom. How tall are they? Well, what did they measure at the combine? Boom. Bryce Young is someone who's perfectly been dealing with this all week. How short is he? Who cares? Is he a good quarterback? Great. Now, with that being said, if you have real issues with it, like, you know, he could get hurt. He's probably more susceptible to injuries. You're probably right. And then this is one big weakness. But is it going to change that much how we feel about him from the combine? If he comes in at 5'10 rather than 5'11, doesn't matter how much it changed for us. I don't. I still think he's the best quarterback in this draft class. Do I think he's a generational talent? No. I still think he's the best one in this draft class. Doesn't matter if he's 5'10 compared to 5'11. Doesn't at all. He knows that. Teams know it. His agent knows it. Most of his fans know it. Does not matter. We eat the stuff up. And in part, I think it puts essentially a stamp on certain aspects that you're looking for. Me personally, and I know a lot of you out there are thinking this the same thing. You want speed on the Bills offense. Jalin Hyatt on Saturday could go out there and the 40-yard dash run in the low 4.2s. If he does it, there are going to be a ton of Bills fans, a ton of national media that'll put Hyatt comfortably in the first round. Even though all we've heard leading up to this draft, leading up to the combine, really, all week this week, this receiver class just ain't that good. It's not that good. Two, maybe three guys are definitely first round potential: Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnson, and Zay Flowers. But there's gonna be some of these guys, and Hyatt to me is probably the perfect one because he's likely gonna run the fastest 40 of the wide receiver group. He runs in low 4.2s. You'll have a lot of people out there, the Mike Macks of the world, that will put him in the first round in their mock drafts come Monday morning comfortably and be like, well, it's his speed. You need that speed. And I'm kind of one of them. I'm kind of one of those like people that wants that to happen because I'm somebody that really likes Jalen Hyatt's game. I get worried that he has a lack of press coverage. Well, anything against press coverage. He basically didn't play against it in college. But that kind of killer speed that, again, I can now put an exact time on after this weekend, that'll get me excited. Because now it's not going to be me sitting here going, likely 4.2s. I don't know, though he could trip. I'll have that number. And it'll be the same with guys like Josh Downs or Quentin Johnston or Jordan Addison as well. Addison is projected to maybe not run that fast for 40 time. But if he runs in the low 4.4s, that dude's a first-round wide receiver. That will happen. And a lot of it, though, too many of us watching, it'll be like, well, how did the combine change anything? It didn't. A lot of these coaching staffs, these scouting departments, could see it on tape and be like, that looks like 4.4 speed. Great. Perfect. Now, there are others, though, who want to see how best you are in the best shape of your life. For many of these guys, the combine is going to be the best shape they're in, training shape they've ever been in. But we already know Jackson Smith Ninjigba is not running the 40. I think that's a brilliant decision by him and his agent and everyone supporting him. He's not that fast of a guy. That's not his game. But in a group that will have guys like a Jalen Hyatt or Josh Downs out of North Carolina, who are going to run in the 4.3s, are very good route runners. At least, in my opinion, Josh Downs is a great route runner and even talked about it today in the media that he really prides himself on that craft. And oof. Second round, Zach is going to be just pounding the drum for wide receiver, and namely Josh Downs. I'm going to be attacking that drum if he is available in like the middle of the second round to trade up and go get him. But that's, we have a month to talk about that. For me, though, a lot of these guys are making those decisions. Just, there's no reason for me to go out there. There's no reason for me to potentially hurt my draft stock when I really won't be able to progress it anyways. Bryce Young is the best quarterback in this draft class. Why should he throw here? Just throw at your pro day when you're able to put everything together. Pro days are worse than the combine in terms of like actually putting together like any sort of like fine print of what you have. Because it is so scripted. It is so weighted heavily in the player's favor, you learn nothing. The most Josh Allen showed in his pro day was what? His arm strength. Wyoming receivers couldn't keep up with his arm. Didn't matter. Just uncork it. Just go after it. And it did wonders for him. You left and guys like Daniel Jeremiah and everyone you see on NFL Network and ESPN are like, yeah, it was, you know, scouting narcotics. Yeah, absolutely. Of course it was. The only guy I can like distinctly remember having a bad pro day was Teddy Bridgewater for one simple reason. He played with gloves on, and he decided, I think at like the 11th hour, to not play with the gloves, and it turned into a disaster because he just was so unused to that. That it just, it didn't look right. It felt, you know, stinted his workout, that it just, it went poorly. It didn't probably cause him, you know, to fall that far in the draft. I think that whole draft class was kind of looked at with like a, is anyone actually that good here? And they kind of were proven right. But I don't know. There's something about the combine, the pro days, that I'm so glued into. And I think a lot of it is just I'm a draft junkie. The longer this goes on, the more I learn about every single player and where they come from and what they're about and what their skill set is and stuff like that. That I just, like, anytime I can get to, like, see them probably perform at the best they can, I'm just all about it. I really am. I want to see most of these guys succeed, like, to the nth degree, some of them you'll hear bad stuff come out about them, and I never root for any of these guys to fail, though. I root for them to get better, to become a better person. But as a player, I root for basically all of them to become good. And maybe that is for me as well. I actually love being wrong in mock drafts and drafts and scouting. I love it because usually that means the player was, I said, was bad and they turned out to be good. Phenomenal. And then if I projected a player was going to be good and they turn out bad, it is what it is. It's an imperfect science. It's the beauty of the draft. Everyone can guess at it. People can get Mel Kiper's book. They can spend years studying. Mike Mayock is maybe the perfect example of a guy who spent years on television, on the NFL Network, telling you exactly where this team should go, who they should pick, giving his, you know, his big board and who are the top five players left at, you know, at pick 24 or whatever it was. For years, I grew up with Mike Mayock every single draft. That was the guy. For a long time. Then it's become like Daniel Jeremiah. For many before, it was Mel Kiper. For me, it was Mike Mayock. He gets a general manager position. You're hard-pressed to find some of the worst drafts. I mean, everyone. It felt like he didn't understand the value of certain picks. He didn't really know how to scout some of these guys for the NFL level. And yet, for years, he had spent his career talking about the draft. That's the kind of imperfect science I kind of love about it. And that's why, like, I'm not going to be surprised if Mike Mayock winds up back on TV as the lead draft analyst for NFL Network. Of course. Perfect. He knows the college guys. He studied them for all year or years for many of them. Cool. Some people get mad because he's bad at drafting, but a lot of these guys will make their careers, general managers I'm talking, will make their careers off of one or two great draft classes. And after that, it'll be like, I'm trying to get one or two pieces each one that like are just starters, not even stars. Ozzie Newsome, to me, is maybe the best general manager ever, drafting-wise, for just keeping those Baltimore Ravens teams, not just competitive, but at the AFC elite with typically bad quarterback play or just bang average. Wins a Super Bowl in 2000 with Trent Dilfer. Wins another one with Joe Flacco. Just by, again, just continuously getting guys in the draft that just would go right in day one. Boom, they're starters and they're impact guys. And you can tell with the Ravens, they've kind of lost that now that Ozzie Newsome's gone. And now that they're on to DaCosta. And you hear everything going on there. It doesn't even sound like DaCosta's liked. The players seem to hate him. But outside of that, everyone else is kind of up in the air. Brandon Bean, who I really like almost everything he does, has been kind of a lousy drafter for the most part. This is a big draft for him. But he's really made his career off of one pick. Josh Allen. A lot of these general managers will too. I think Joe Douglas has done a brilliant job with the Jets. But he will be fired this year if they can't land a big-time quarterback because he botched the Zach Wilson pick. And yet I think he's done everything else wonderfully. I think everything else he has done makes the Jets a terrifying prospect. And yet they have so poorly handled the quarterback position, it barely matters. And I just, that's why to me, I find the draft and everything leading up to it just so fascinating. And why I'm glued into it so much is because it is such an imperfect science. It does not matter what some of these guys run in the 40. It does not matter how some of these guys throw at the combine. You already know who they are. You've seen 3-4 years of tape. That's who they are. Some of them will get through as diamonds in the rough because of where they played or the amount of reps they could get. But for the most part, they've told you already who they are. And now it's more or less like how hard are they willing to work? Who actually ends up drafting them? What system do they get in? And stuff like that. It doesn't matter what they do at the pro day and the combine, but to me, it doesn't matter. I eat this stuff up all the way until April 27th, usually when the first round is. And I can't wait for tomorrow. I've been watching it all week. I'm watching all the coverage. And it should be a good time, especially with wide receivers, tight ends especially. Michael Mayer talked about him meeting with the Bills out of Notre Dame. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a very, very fun weekend. Going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, Formula One begins this weekend. Qualifying is tomorrow. The race is Sunday. And there looks to be a very surprising team at the top of the paddock. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Nightcap on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap here on WGR as we wrap up a Friday night here on WGR. Howard Simon's last day I wanted to talk about F1, and I'm like, wait a second, I haven't even mentioned this yet. I came in this morning. I did work on the morning show for 6-7 months when I first got here. And Howard just meant the world to me, especially as someone who grew up in the area. I'm an early riser. I did listen to quite a bit of Howard and Jeremy when I was younger, and I interned for them as well right before the pandemic. So, I mean, Howard's been a major mentor to me for really the first year and a half of my career, which feels like I've been here longer than that. But it was weird today, you know, seeing and hearing everyone, and you are reminded that he really has been on the airwaves, at least in this singular spot, for like 20 years. And I'm like, I'm 24. Like, it's insane to me that it really has been most of my life he has been on the airwaves. I hope he enjoys retirement. I hope he moves to a warmer climate as I look outside of our Amherst studio and see cold rain, and that will soon turn into snow. So please drive safely as well. But very, very well deserved. As he put it, not really retirement, just not doing this anymore. Absolutely wonderful. It was good to see him again as well. I haven't really have had no reason to come in the morning that often. I usually get here at 2, and he's well gone as well. Mike was mentioning that too. It's just, you know, the timelines, it usually doesn't mix. And so it was kind of nice to see everybody that I haven't really seen in the morning, including Jeremy as well, Joe, Evan, and all those guys. But it's definitely going to it's gonna feel weird on Monday. I think it's going to feel weird on Monday. I made sure to be up at 6 to listen to today's show. And I think I'm going to be up at 6 on Monday as well to make sure to listen to that show, because it's just it's going to be cool to kind of be a part of that and to see like the transition to, you know, to whoever kind of steps in. But it is definitely a weird feeling now going into it, and I think it's going to hit Monday. I think for a lot of people, and I know for me especially as well. I do want to hit a little bit on some F1 before we get out of here tonight. Today was the first two practice sessions, and Aston Martin, they have been the talk of pretty much all of Formula One Twitter, everything I read about, just how they looked at testing in Bahrain last week, and to see them somewhat, I guess, carry that over today, practice number two, ending with Fernando Alonso, 41 years old, at Aston Martin, and he has the fastest time. And like, the Aston Martin looks fast. It looks like it's going to be one of the quicker cars on the track. And even you hear other competitors saying like the same things. Like, you always hear them throw around the Mercedes, the Red Bulls, the Ferraris. Like, when they talk about the top teams, that's who they throw around. You're hearing those teams also mention Aston Martin. And it's so weird for me to hear. Because when I got into the sport, they had moved over from being Force India and Racing Point to now be Aston Martin. And all I really knew them was as the team that, well, yes, it's Aston Martin. They were owned by Lawrence Stroll, and his son raced. And like, he had kind of owned them for, you know, if it wasn't Aston Martin, it was, you know, Racing Point. He had owned them for a little bit, and his son had always been in that seat. And I'm like, okay. So you're really not supposed to be here, but your dad owns the team. And I have a huge issue with that. I just, because it stereotypically comes to me that like, your son plays quarterback on the Pee Wee team because you're the coach, or your son pitches because you're the coach. And I'm like, I hate that. It's stereotypical of me, I know, but it will always rub me the wrong way. But even to see Lance Stroll today finishing like P6 out of 20, I was like, oh, and he's got a broken wrist. It's going to be a really, really fascinating season just to kind of see. Number one, if anyone's near the Red Bulls, but if Aston Martin is this fast, does Fernando Alonso get his first win, I think, in 9 years? Does Lance Stroll get his first win of his career? Do we start seeing Aston Martin podiums? We only got one podium last year that was not of the big three that I mentioned, Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari. That was Lando Norris and a McLaren, also a historic brand. And of course, as well, we get our first American driver for the first time since, I think, 2013, and Logan Sargeant at Williams. Should be a lot of fun. First week is Sunday at 10 a.m. Qualifying is tomorrow at 10 a.m. again in Bahrain. That's going to do it here for the nightcap. I'll be back on Monday. The Sabres play tomorrow. Pregame at 11, not 11:30. It'll be a 90-minute pregame as puck drop is at 12:30. It'll be at home as the Sabres host the Tampa Bay Lightning. That'll do it here. You're listening to the nightcap on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. you'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Very surprising team at the top of the paddock. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Nightcap on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap here on WGR as we wrap up a Friday night here on WGR. Howard Simon's last day. I want to talk about F1, and I'm like, wait a second, I haven't even mentioned this yet. I came in this morning. I did work on the morning show for 6-7 months when I first got here. And Howard just meant the world to me, especially as someone who grew up in the area. I'm an early riser. I did listen to quite a bit of Howard and Jeremy when I was younger, and I interned for them as well right before the pandemic. So, I mean, Howard's been a major mentor to me for really the first year and a half of my career, which feels like I've been here longer than that. But It was weird today, you know, seeing and hearing everyone, and you are reminded that he really has been on the airwaves, at least in this singular spot, for like 20 years, and I'm like, I'm 24, like it's insane to me that it really has been most of my life he has been on the airwaves. I hope he enjoys retirement. I hope he moves to a warmer climate as I look outside of our Amherst studio and see cold rain, and that will soon turn into snow, so please drive safely as well. But very, very well deserved. As he put it, not really retirement, just not doing this anymore. Absolutely wonderful. It was good to see him again as well. I haven't really have had no reason to come in the morning that often. I usually get here at 2, and he's well gone as well. Mike was mentioning that too. It's just, you know, the timelines, it usually doesn't mix. And so it was kind of nice to see everybody that I haven't really seen in the morning, including Jeremy as well, Joe, Evan, and all those guys. But it's definitely gonna it's gonna feel weird on Monday. I think it's gonna feel weird on Monday. I made sure to be up at 6 to listen to today's show, and I think I'm gonna be up at 6 on Monday as well to make sure to listen to that show, because it's just it's gonna be cool to kind of be a part of that and to see like the transition to, you know, to whoever kind of steps in. But it is definitely a weird feeling now going into it, and I think it's gonna hit Monday. I think for a lot of people, and I know for me especially as well. I do want to hit a little bit on some F1 before we get out of here tonight. Today was the first two practice sessions, and Aston Martin, they have been the talk of pretty much all of Formula One Twitter, everything I read about, just how they looked at testing in Bahrain last week, and to see them somewhat, I guess, carry that over today, practice number two ending with Fernando Alonso, 41 years old, at Aston Martin, and he has the fastest time, and like the Aston Martin looks fast. It looks like it's going to be one of the quicker cars on the track. And even you hear other competitors saying like the same things. Like you always hear them throw around the Mercedes, the Rebels, the Ferraris. Like when they talk about the top teams, that's who they throw around. You're hearing those teams also mention Aston Martin, and it's so weird for me to hear. Because when I got into the sport, they had moved over from being Force India and Racing Point to now be Aston Martin. And all I really knew them was as the team that, well, yes, it's Aston Martin. They were owned by Lawrence Stroll, and his son raced. And like he had kind of owned them for, you know, if it wasn't Aston Martin, it was, you know, Racing Point. He had owned them for a little bit, and his son had always been in that seat. And I'm like, oh, all right, yes, okay. So you're really not supposed to be here, but your dad owns the team. And I have a huge issue with that. I just, because stereotypically comes to me that like your son plays quarterback on the Pee Wee team because you're the coach, or your son pitches because you're the coach. And I'm like, I hate that. It's stereotypical of me. I know, but it will always rub me the wrong way. But even to see Lance Stroll today finishing like P6 out of 20, I was like, oh, and he's got a broken wrist. it's going to be really, really fascinating season just to kind of see it. Number one, if anyone's near the Red Bulls, but if Aston Martin is this fast, does Fernando Alonso get his first win, I think, in 9 years? Does Lance Stroll get his first win of his career? Do we start seeing Aston Martin podiums? And we only got one podium last year that was not of the big three that I mentioned, Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari. That was Lando Norris and a McLaren, also a historic brand. And, of course, as well, we get our first American driver for the first time since, I think, 2013, and Logan Sargeant at Williams. Should be a lot of fun. First week is Sunday at 10 a.m. Qualifying is tomorrow at 10 a.m. again in Bahrain. That's going to do it here for the nightcap. I'll be back on Monday. The Sabres play tomorrow. Pregame at 11, not 11:30. It'll be a 90-minute pregame as puck drop is at 12:30. It'll be at home as the Sabres host the Tampa Bay Lightning. That'll do it here. You're listening to the nightcap on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.